welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ update. This is a final reminder that you need to migrate your LQ bookmarks to the new bookmarks.linuxquestions.org site. If you're not familiar with bookmarks.linuxquestions.org, we think you'll like it. It allows you to bookmark, tag, annotate, and share links to open source and Linux-related sites. It also allows you to access your bookmarks from any browser on any machine anywhere on the net. We'll be removing the bookmarks functionality from LQ in probably 2 to 3 days. As always, we're looking for feedback, both on the podcast and on LQ Radio in general. Whether it be an audio comment or a comment on the LQ Radio site itself, we want to hear what you're thinking. Also, if you're getting all these podcasts but not the rest of the LQ Radio content, make sure that you sign up either for the combined RSS feed, which contains everything, or both feeds individually if you prefer to do something different with, you know, the content. And the reason, once again, that there are two feeds is the podcast feed contains only the podcasts, which are generally between about 5 and 15 minutes and therefore are pretty small files. The other feed contains the LQ Radio shows and the LQ Radio interview series. Those generally run about an hour to an hour and a half, so they are considerably bigger files. And while on the LQ Radio topic, our next guest is going to be Doc Searles, who is confirmed for next week, and you can also expect another LQ Radio show in the near future, so you're going to want to make sure you're signed up for that RSS feed now. Now, on to the news. The first story I have for you is the one that's about Microsoft leveraging a so-called iPod patent. I'm not sure if I'm the only one who in no way understands why this story has been getting all the hype that it has recently. I'll keep my opinion on patents in general kind of to myself and as an aside for the moment, since I've made my opinion on that topic known both here on the podcast and on my blog at jeremy.linuxquestions.org. So my opinion on patents in general should be well known. So first, the Microsoft patent in no way overlaps with the Apple iPod patent from what I can tell. The Microsoft's patent is for something that they call Auto DJ, which, quote, generates playlists for a library collection of media items via selecting a plurality of seed items and at least one undesirable seed item, end quote. And I'm not sure. I do have an iPod, and I use GTK Pod, so a lot of the iTunes functionality I probably don't know about. But I'm not aware that you can give a couple of things you want to hear and one or two things you don't want to hear to iTunes and have it make a custom playlist for you. So I don't think that this patent covers anything that the iPod can currently do. And so while it's true that Apple's patent application did get denied recently, I fail to see where that translates into Microsoft being able to charge money for the Auto DJ patent, which was indeed approved, but the functionality isn't there. Kind of as a side note here, the Auto DJ functionality does sound kind of cool, and I'm not sure if Microsoft is going to implement that in their own device, because I do believe they said that they were considering an MP3 hardware device, or if they're going to just outsource or sell the patent for other people to implement. But it does sound like a cool idea. One of the news articles that I read was from Sky News, and they had quoted a £6 per iPod figure. I have no idea where they got this figure from, and I have to kind of assume they just made it up, because I've not seen anywhere where Microsoft has released any kind of pricing for the Auto DJ patent. And like I said, even if they did release pricing, it wouldn't apply to the iPod that I can tell now. So I have absolutely no idea where they came up with that figure, but I certainly give no credence to it. And even if the Microsoft patent does somehow cover something that is in the iPod, I have to believe that the fact that the patent was filed well after the iPod actually shipped and was released and you could get one in your hands, so prior art has to apply here. So this whole story seems a little bit unbelievable. I hope that I'm just completely missing something here. So if I am, either email me or send me an audio comment or post a comment on the LQ Radio site to this podcast. I'd like to know what I'm missing. On to the next story. Did Firefox lose market share in July to Internet Explorer? Looks like Net Applications think so, and they quoted a 0.64% drop with a sample size of 40,000 sites. At first, I really didn't give credence to this. Kind of a half of a percent drop over only 40,000 sites, not a single mention of expected error margin. So it didn't, you know, I didn't believe a whole lot in the numbers, and I wasn't sure how accurate they really were. So I decided to run some stats on LQ and compare them with the stats that I did back in July, and I posted all those numbers back in July on my blog. It turns out that LQ has also seen a small drop in Mozilla Firefox usage and a small corollary increase in Internet Explorer usage. I have to admit, I'm a bit surprised here. I'm interested to do the same test again next month to see if this is a pattern emerging or if it was just kind of an anomaly or what. We all knew that the growth of Firefox had to slow down at some point. I have to admit that I personally thought that the plateau would come well after 10%, so I hope this is kind of just a small blip and not something that's going to turn into a pattern. But I'm sure the speculation will begin on why it happened. I don't think the fact that all the new back-to-school PCs that people are buying come preloaded with IE should be underestimated here, though. That's a large number of PCs, probably second only to before Christmas, are bought around this time as people go back to both high school and college right around the same time. So given the fact that all those have IE and none of them that, to my knowledge, ship with Firefox yet, that's got to be a large number of PCs coming online. So let's hope that given a little bit of time to become infested with spyware, I think the Firefox number may start to rise again, but I'm not entirely sure. And I've also heard a rumor that one of the recent Microsoft security patches had automatically reverted some people's settings back to IE being the default. And to be honest, I think a lot of people that are just kind of cursory users might not even notice the switch immediately until the spyware starts to become a problem and they can call their, you know, quote-unquote computer-savvy friend to come fix it. So let's see if we can get a pattern out of this. And if you have had the problem with the Microsoft patch reverting, I'd like to hear from you, so let me know on that. And if you have any other speculation, of course, feel free to post it on the LQ Radio site. And just so everyone has the numbers, for July, LQ had seen 57.7% of the users using Firefox, and that had dropped to 56.8% for the first 2 weeks here in August. And the corollary Internet Explorer had started at 27.9%, and that had increased to 29.1%. I posted an article about 2 days ago on my blog that has the full browser rundown that includes Firefox, Internet Explorer, Conker, Opera, Safari, Galleon, Lynx, etc. So if you want the full numbers, go ahead and go to my blog. And the last story I have for you. HP calls for Sun and IBM to remove OSS licenses. I gotta love it when one large company calls for two other competing companies to do something. In this case, it was Martin Fink calling for Sun and IBM to depreciate both the CDDL and the CPL, respectively. And the CDDL is Sun's license that they recently released Open Solaris under, of course. First, having just attended the OSI Birds of a Feather at OSCON, I am definitely acutely aware of the problem with license proliferation. And beyond being aware with it, I definitely do agree that this really is a problem that really does need to be addressed. And as I think I mentioned in a recent podcast, I have gone as far, after having attended that BOF, to offer both LQ's help and my help personally, if there's anything I can do, to the OSI to help with licensing proliferation. So I agree that it's a problem. So that being said, though, from what I can tell, this is just a pot shot, and clearly it was posturing from HP. Considering one of the main mantras of OSS community is choice is good, it seems odd to me to try to force everyone to use the GPL. And while the GPL is a good license for some cases, it's not a good license, in my opinion, for other cases. And due to the viral kind of nature of it, it's definitely not for everyone. And it's not that multiple licenses are bad, really. It's the proliferation of needless licenses that are bad, in my opinion. So especially, you know, just to take one example in Sun's case, I'm almost positive that it's not even technically possible for them to GPL Solaris due to some third-party things that are included that isn't up to them how to license it. So, like I said, this just kind of seemed like posturing from HP, which really doesn't help anyone. You have to also keep in mind that the CDDL is mostly Mozilla's MPL with a few changes that Sun felt it was necessary. Just as an example, the CDDL announcement clearly states, and this is a quote, "We have carefully reviewed the existing OSI-approved licenses and found none of them to meet our needs, and thus have reluctantly drafted a new open-source license based on the Mozilla public license. We do appreciate the issue of license proliferation, however, and have worked hard to make the common development and distribution license as reusable as possible. Additionally, we have attempted to address the problems we perceived in existing open source licenses that lead us to conclude that reusing those existing licenses was impractical." So those of you that are either readers of my blog or listen to most of the LQ podcasts, you know that I definitely don't agree with Sun in many cases, but in this case, I don't think that they necessarily did anything wrong. And other non-Sun projects are using the CDDL, so it seems to be a license that, you know, has some merit. Additionally, I don't know if it was Martin or one of the journalists who said, and this is the quote, "In contrast, an open-source license like IBM's is copyrighted. This seemed to insinuate that the GPL is not copyrighted, which is obviously incorrect. The bottom line is, write a good tool, use the right tool for the job, and then license that tool under the right open source license. And yeah, it is a shame that all code is not compatible, and that would be great, it would be ideal, but it's just really not realistic or feasible. And one of the main reasons is the driving reason behind why people open source license in the first place is just different. Some people want BSD license, which, while it does allow commercial companies to just use your code without giving anything back, it kind of ensures that the most people will use your code. And that's what some people want, and that's fine. I definitely don't see anything wrong with that. And don't forget that neither of the two products that are quickly becoming the backbone of the web, and that's Firefox and Apache, neither of those are GPL'd. So I think the biggest irony here is that both Sun and IBM have done significantly more for the open source community, in my opinion, than HP has. And that's not to detract from the many legitimate contributions that HP have made, because they have made a ton. But just for some perspective, I don't think they've given quite as much as IBM or Sun has. In the end, he did get the crowd to clap and go wild, though. And you know, I guess that's all that matters to some. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us. Thanks.